The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game with me, Kevin Day, and Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. How are you at the moment, Kieran? Where are you, by the way? I lose track of where you are on a daily basis.
No, I'm home. I'm home. We're recording this on Sunday morning, so we're playing Villa this afternoon. So I've got the dilemma, because of the World Cup getting in the way, this is our last home game before Christmas, so should I wear my Christmas jumper to the match?
Oh, that depends. What's on your Christmas jumper, Kieran?
Reindeer.
It's not at the moment, darling, but it's quite mild. But
hey! God, I'm so glad, wasn't I?
People are going to think we set that up deliberately. We did not set that up deliberately.
You can
Christmas started on the 1st of October, Kieran. You can wear your Christmas jumper wherever you want.
I've got official approval.
Yeah, and I hope you enjoy the football in a way that I did not enjoy the football yesterday. I'm in a dilemma, Kieran. I'm not normally Villa's biggest fan, but obviously I want them to win today. I actually quite like Villa. That's where we got our kit from originally in 1905.
Right. Fair enough.
I'll get in trouble with Steve Parish now for mentioning 1905. Because obviously we're a much older football team than that. Yes. Our first question, Kieran, is questions day today. And our first question comes from Adam Nixon. Hello, Adam. And Adam says, on the final day of last season, my club Port Vale travelled to Exeter as they tried to secure a playoff place. The game sold out weeks beforehand and Port Vale had an application to the league approved to stream the game at Vale Park. My question is, did Port Vale have to pay any of the revenue made from the live stream at Vale Park to Exeter? If we owed Exeter money, did Exeter contribute to the cost of streaming the game?
Yeah, good. It's a good one, this, from Adam.
It's an interesting one, yeah.
It is. The EFL clubs had a general meeting, which they do on a regular basis, which is understandable. And at that meeting, they agreed that the club that sells the streams keeps the revenue. So therefore, Port Vale would have kept 100% of the money. Now, this is the issue that our friend Andy Holt's unhappy about, because yeah. From his point of view, he says, we're a relatively small club in League One. We are dependent upon clubs bringing large away attendances to help us. And that potentially is going to hit us much harder than the other teams. So I think going forwards, as I think streaming is going to become more and more popular, especially given that so many people have got financial challenges, I suspect the EFL will take a look at that distribution model to perhaps bring it a little bit more of a more even distribution of that. But also in terms of the beanbacks, the home team has to agree. So in this particular case, Exeter would have been asked by Port Vale, do you object to a beanback? And what Exeter will have undoubtedly said, well, provided you sell all of the away tickets, fill your boots. Yeah, we've got no issue with this. And then what happens? Those monies would have been kept, for a beanback, it would have been kept by Port Vale, but they would have also, that would have obliged them to produce what's referred to as a gate statement with the EFL. And from that, they pay a levy to the EFL for a proportion of every ticket goes into a central pot for the running of the league and so on.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, Bean. Palace have had a couple of big backs and playoff games, one in particular at Sunderland. But it sold out a playoff game. The away end's going to sell out within minutes, normally, isn't it? I think even if people knew there was going to be a big back, I think you'd want to be at the actual game. Do you have any idea what sort of money is involved, Kieran? Would we know?
No, I mean, I remember going to a beanback Remember in COVID, things started to relax a little bit. And I think we paid a tenner to go and watch the match at the Amex against somebody or other. So it would simply depend upon the number of tickets sold. But normally, yeah, I think the going rate would be a tenner. Certainly, as far as the rates for the EFL I follow service, that works out as £10 per match. So I'd imagine it might be either that, or it might be a wee bit higher if you're doing it in a lounge for a beanbag. So it would very much vary from club to club.
You mentioned Andy Holt. For new listeners, he's the owner of Accrington Stanley. And also for newer listeners, his major problem with streaming is it started several years ago simply for overseas fans to be able to tune into games. And inevitably, that's been added to. And his prediction right from the start is that at some stage, every game will be available to stream, and that will inevitably affect the income of clubs like Accrington.
Absolutely.
Our next question comes from Jonathan Cable. Jonathan says, I have some questions for the pod about how the Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland games moving to a fairly unknown streaming platform in 2024 came about. When did UEFA centralise rights? Will it benefit the respective FAs? Are they stuck with these deals? And will those in those countries be left asking Uncle Terry where we can watch?
I think this is a deal done with Premier Sports, who are now Viaplay. They appear to be a Norwegian organization, and it costs £15 a month if you want Viaplay's sports service. And they've got some American franchises, some obscure sports if you want La Liga as well. What UEFA appear to have done is that because the World Cup's taking place, there's some friendly matches also taking place, and I think that this might involve the Nations League in some other countries as well, where they have sold the rights. But yeah, my view is who's going to attend these friendlies, especially if they sort of coincide or overlap with the World Cup? I can't see any attendances. Also, UEFA have said that individual nations cannot force clubs to release players. So if we take a look at Scotland, I think they've got one of these matches. The Republic of Ireland got some of these matches. Norway are playing these matches as well. But Celtic have said, well, we've arranged an Australian tour for the next few weeks. As we don't have to let our players go, we'll keep them. Thank you very much. Yeah, we'd much rather they play. Yeah, they train and get more experience with the rest of the squad. So it does seem to be a bit of an own goal. These people, Premier Sports, I know they sponsor football in Scotland. They do appear to have a closer relationship there, but it does seem £15 a month, that's more than you pay for your TV license for relatively niche sports. So we do not condone or encourage people to get dodgy sticks, but I suspect that there will be a demand for them. As we've said in recent weeks, that is becoming more and more common. The number of WhatsApp groups that you're on where people say, can anybody get me a stick? I go, well, not getting it from me. I don't know anything about this. I'll keep away from it. But it does seem to be becoming more and more popular. And the increased diversification, is that the right word, or of rights into more and more rights holders, so that you now need 3, 4, 5 subscriptions, I think he's going to reach a tipping point as far as football fans are concerned.
Yes, worth pointing out that it's not just Scotland that Celtic aren't releasing players. Well, they're not releasing players to any team, not in the World Cup, basically, who want to play friendlies during that time. UEFA did, part of the Nations League deal was that UEFA centralised the broadcasting rights deal, wasn't it, in order to get a better deal for those smaller UEFA nations that wouldn't be asked to play those lucrative friendlies against England. Someone like Gibraltar, for example, who England are not going to ask Gibraltar to play them in a friendly. Gibraltar haven't got the money to pay England to play them in a friendly. So part of the Nations League idea was that the broadcasting rights for that would be centralised and the money split evenly, so a team like Gibraltar would get some money at least. Is that right?
Yep, that sounds fair. Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
Yeah, we're getting near kickoff, aren't we? Which is why you're normally you're only too keen to illuminate. I can hear.
What UEFA I have been reading about is that the Nations League could be expanded to other FIFA associations. I think it's CONMICOL, which is I'll lose track of which one it is, but that there have been talks that the next Nations League could involve more than just countries affiliated to UEFA. And I'm not saying it will be a threat to the FIFA World Cup, but it will be, you know, if we have the likes of Brazil and Argentina involved, it would certainly increase interest.
Well, it would in Liechtenstein, certainly, or Gibraltar. nothing would surprise me, Kieran. I'm still sulking about Australia being in Eurovision. That's, you know... you know my ability to sulk. That's why I'm so annoyed about yesterday's dismal performance, because I've got 5 weeks to sulk about that. I haven't got the consolation of a game at Sellers Park to cheer me up. This World Cup is another reason. Well, I know it's the least of the reasons why the World Cup shouldn't be in the Qatar here, but it's... now, our next question apparently comes from Brian Smoden. My apologies, Brian. I'm wondering whether producer Guy is, you know, in his haste toss this script off to us, as he does minutes before we do the show, has got that name wrong. It's meant to be Brian Snowden, in which case it's either Brian Snowden or Brian Snowden. It's a lovely name either way, and it's a very good question. Excuse me. Brian says, I understand why clubs sell a high number of tickets to tourist fans who will pay crazy prices to see one of the big clubs in the best league in the world, which he's put in inverted commas, which I'm taking as an indication of sarcasm. These fans also spend a lot more in the club shop than local fans. This got me thinking, has any research been done on average, brackets, mean and mode, Kieran, the average mean and mode fan spend at games, and how has this changed?
Well, this is spreadsheet heaven for me, as you can imagine. If we take a look at the most recent season, which was not impacted by COVID, which was 2018-19, as far as the financial results are concerned, the average, the mean revenue per fan per seat was £29.88, which you might think, well, that's actually not too bad. Ooh. In the Premier League. But remember that includes kid seats. Yeah, that includes concessions, senior citizens, and so on. But then I went in and I did it on a club by club, match by match basis, put all the figures together, and what we saw in the Premier League was a huge difference. If we take a look at Liverpool, for example, the average take per fan per seat was £59.88. Now. And you might go, Jesus Christ, yeah, that does seem steep. But remember, Liverpool only sell 50% of capacity of Anfield to season ticket holders. Yes. So therefore, they do make a lot of money from individual match ticket sales. That will, of course, include what they generate from hospitality packages. And Liverpool is so popular that what they are now doing is they are hiring Aintree Racecourse before the match and doing the pre-match, you know, food, chat with a legend and so on, and then busing these people in with their match ticket. Right. And they're still selling out on these. And I've seen some of the prices that are being charged, you know, when they are. It's a very, very lucrative part of the market. So Liverpool were at the top at £59.88. And at the other end, we had Huddersfield, who were also in the Premier League that season. The average that Huddersfield were charging their fans was £10.75. So it was a huge range. Palace, as you might be interested, Palace were £18.51. So Palace were below the mean. They were also below the median of £21.83. You can probably sense the big smile I've got on my face going through these numbers. And then Brian also said how this has changed. So I went into the season 1992-93, and to give you some comparison, because Liverpool and Palace were both in the Premier League in that season, Liverpool was an average of £12.72. So they've gone from £12.72 to £59.88. And at Palace in 92-93, the average was just £5.37 for the first season of the Premier League, which seems, you know, seems very reasonable, but then, you know, You've got kids, you've got pensioners, you've got season ticket holders, and it's actually probably a fair price. So certainly, you know, these prices have hugely advanced ahead of inflation. I think inflation's around about 90%. You know, Palace's have tripled, Liverpool's have gone up by, you know, a factor of over 4.5. So that is indicative of being a football fan is taking up an increased slice of your disposable income.
Yeah, last time my dad, God rest his soul, went to Palace, or paid to go to Palace, he didn't, because we turned up, first game of the season, he was with me and my mates, and it had gone up to a fiver to get in, and he went, I'm not paying a fiver to see that shit, and he went home. the only time he ever came back afterwards was when we were in some sort of hospitality thing, which he graciously accepted. I'm struggling to understand, Kip, the Palace median, average, knowing how much some of the tickets are, that seems incredibly low, that average. I can't work out how it can only be that small amount.
Well, I mean, I don't know how much your season ticket works out per match.
More than that.
And, you know, Palace have got a big, yeah, they've got a large number of under-18s, under-21 tickets.
Yeah, that's true.
You factor that in, you know, senior citizen tickets are lower as well. And remember, these figures that I'm quoting are net of VAT. So it's how much does the club generate per ticket rather than how much is it. So you'd have to add on a wee bit for VAT on top.
I factored in, Kieran, it was net of VAT. It was the first thing that sprang to my mind. Also, I'm trying to get over yesterday's result, and so far we've done nothing but talk about Crystal Palace. It's got to stop. Our next question comes from Sam.
You'll be unlucky now.
Our next question comes from Sam. I hope I pronounce this right, Sam, but it's Sam Cronier, or possibly Cronier. Sam says, I love the podcast and learning much about the underbelly of the world game. In July, four Premier League teams, including Crystal Palace, played friendlies in Perth. Clearly, they were enticed by money to come, but what was the likely payday for the clubs, and how would this money have been split? I'm particularly interested in this question, Kieran, not the Palace link, but doing some research for another project into Tottenham's pre-season tour to South Korea, and clearly they made a shed load of money. It's a sensible place for Tottenham to go, considering that they've got the captain of the South Korean men and women's team playing for them. But it's very difficult to pin down how much they did make. So I'd be interested, because there are quite a few eyebrows raised when it was announced that Palace were going to Australia, and when the packages, you know, just £2,500 to follow the boys down under, which not many people took up, you'd be amazed to hear. Yeah. So I'd be interested in the answer to this question.
Yes, it is normally negotiated between a promoter and an individual football club. And I've got to be honest here, the promoters are interested in, you know, half a dozen clubs in the Premier League. So if we take a look at Manchester United, because they do split out the monies in their accounts, in 2018-19, again, last season before COVID, they generated £11 million from pre-season friendlies for their promotional fees. Now, that's more than, I think, around about half a dozen clubs in the Premier League generate for the whole season from ticket sales. So it can be very lucrative. I think for the non-greedy six clubs, whatever we want to call them, the non-Super League elite, you might get a modest fee, mainly because you're a bit like, you remember when the Harlem Globetrotters used to go on tour and there would always be an opposing side. you are the make weights, because the reason why the tickets sell, and this is not me having a go at Palace or Brighton or Villa or any other club, unless you've got a big expat fan base. So Leeds, for example, they do have a big fan base in Australia, so they would have been able to get a half decent fee. I think for some of the smaller clubs, you'll get a nominal fee, you'll get your costs covered, and you'll get a bit more, and that's about as far as it goes, because you are not the reason why the tickets are selling. It's because they want to go and see Cristiano Ronaldo and Fernandes and so on. And rightly or wrongly, Manchester United leverage on that, and people come to see their employees, they're entitled to negotiate as good a fee as they can generate. But I think for the smaller clubs, I know we at Brighton, we're planning a US tour next summer. I can't see us getting a big fee from it, because we're not big enough in our own right to sell tickets.
I assumed, Kieran, when you said Brighton were planning a tour, it was going to be the Vineyards of Bordeaux. Or possibly a light cruise down the road. Leeds were involved in this tournament that Palace played in. Which was a particularly friendly game, by all accounts. Interesting question, that one, though. Thank you, Sam. The next question comes from... Oh, speaking of which, though, this just reminded me. Anecdotally, Chevrolet, that huge, huge deal that Chevrolet did with Man United, apparently came about because they were so impressed with the amount of people that turned up when United went on a pre-season tour of China. And they said the interest was such that they thought this clearly is a global brand and upped the price accordingly. Whether that's true or not, whether you have any insight to that, I don't know, Kieran. But good.
I've not heard of that one, okay. But it would sound about true. There's been lots of eyebrows raised about the amount that Chevrolet did sponsor in Manchester United, especially given that in the UK, Chevrolet's sales were 16 a year. You'd have to share. And it didn't move as a result of that sponsorship. But they might have claimed it moved elsewhere around the planet.
I think it went down in the UK, didn't it?
Yes.
Certainly in Liverpool. The sales of Chevrolets in Liverpool went through the floor. Matty, says, came across the show by accident, but have since been binging all the previous episodes. Love what you guys do. Apologies if this has been asked before, but do football teams actually make money from FIFA video games, or is it more just free publicity? Two things, Kieran. This is one of those questions that we have actually talked about before, but I'm happy to revisit for newer listeners. Also, I don't know how you come across a podcast by accident. I occasionally get bored. I say occasionally, quite often during the day, we'll get bored and we'll start flicking through the channels and think, oh, there's a new Christmas channel. I might watch something on this. Every now and again, you're listening to the radio. And you'll come across it, but I don't know how you come across it by accident. But I'm glad that Matty has done, and I'm glad that he really likes it. And do you have an answer to the question, Kieran?
Yes, I do. I mean, how you come across podcasts by accident is, as an avid podcast listener, because I spend half of my life writing and marking exams, so therefore I have something on in the background. If you decide you're going to look at a football podcast, what it will do is it will pick up from that, and it will then start to suggest normally some alternatives. So I think we are because we do okay for ourselves as far as the charts are concerned. We do come up on people's recommendation list, and the first thing that people look at is what are the average scores, and I think we're doing quite well at 4.9 out of 5, which from what you say is possibly not what many of the Palace players would have got yesterday in terms of their performance.
Thank you for that, Kieran. You've also asked, you've answered the least important part of that question first, but there you are.
Right. As far as the relationship between Konami, who do Pro Evolution Soccer, and Electronic Arts, who do FIFA, it's quite a complex one, because that as far as Electronic Arts are concerned, they have a naming rights deal, first of all, with FIFA. And FIFA do ridiculously well out of this, because FIFA put zero into this, and they've been getting $150 million per year purely because, you know, if you're watching matches, if you're watching commercial TV, you will see lots of adverts for FIFA 23. It's one of the biggest sellers as far as Electronic Arts are concerned. Electronic Arts is estimated to have made more than $20 billion from the sales of this one game alone. So FIFA have said, oh, well, you're doing all right at this. Can we have a bigger slice? And FIFA have turned around and, you know, effectively given them the middle finger with regards to this. And they have set up, it would appear, they've set up something called EA Sports FC. So I think from 2024, I think that's when the license expires. It's no longer going to be called, you know, FIFA 23 or FIFA 24. It's going to be EA Sports FC 24. And they've also now signed a sponsorship deal with La Liga. So they're going to try to get this brand name out. FIFA say, well, we're going to set up our own computer game. The trouble is that they've got no experience of doing so. Gianni Infantino, from his from his new apartment in Qatar, where he's decided to relocate himself, which seems a bit of a strange thing to do. Whether he has the skills to do that, I'm not so certain. Now, in addition to FIFA just giving its name, we have a licensing agreement between FIFA Pro. Now, FIFA Pro is the Footballers Union. And what FIFA Pro do is they say, well, we will allow you to use our members' names and likenesses. So, some of these likenesses are a bit hit and miss, I'll be honest. FIFA Pro is protecting its members' rights. And I know that some of the individual members aren't happy about that. I think Zlatan Ibrahimovic, for example, he's at a bit of a grizzle about it. And then there's a third set of licensing between Electronic Arts and the individual clubs. And what they do is that they sign individual deals. So, there is a pecking order in football. Real Madrid, Manchester United, Bayern Munich will be able to generate more money from this than, with no disrespect, somebody like Reading or Morecambe. Because when people play the games, they're more likely to want to play as the more glamorous sort of global clubs. And we have seen a bit of a spat recently between Electronic Arts and Juventus. So Juventus didn't like the amount of money that was offered by Electronic Arts. So they saw their arse and they went off and signed up with the rivals, who are Konami with Pro Evolution Soccer, where you can't use the names of the clubs and there has to be subtle changes and changes of badges and so on. And it looks just a bit, a bit like a nine bob note, in the sense that it's not quite the real thing, but you know what they're trying to get across. But Juventus have now come back into the Electronic Arts fold from 23-24, they're very keen to promote, and they've also got quite some. I do like a Juventus shirt, so it's always a good one to have in realism.
I don't know if you saw, Kieran, and you shouldn't really laugh at inept criminals. But there was a young man in Newcastle who was forging £10 notes and unfortunately put them down as 10 pounder notes. and was astonished when they were tracked down to... if I was one of your students, Kieran, I'm not entirely sure I'd be happy that Sir was marking my exam whilst listening to a true crime podcast, waiting to hear Uncle Terry's voice one more time. I think you should be paying more attention. And talking of students, Kieran, our next question comes from Khalid Ali. And I like the cut of Khalid Ali's jib. I really do. I like his honesty. Khalid says, I'm a big fan of the pod, as it gave me an edge in completing my master's in sports management. Congratulations, Khalid. I always magically had talking points in class, and I owe you both that honour, which is exactly the sort of thing I do, is listen, hear something on the radio and then pass it off as my own information. Well done, Colin. My question is about sponsorship in football broadcasting. When we compare it to the NBA and NFL, football has nowhere near as many sponsors on our screens at any one time. I'm not necessarily saying we should have, but how long will it be before we have VAR calls sponsored by Specsavers, very funny, or handball checks sponsored by some massive company who may or may not be related to hands?
Well, if nothing to do with Donald Trump, then.
Yeah, you could have a watch manufacturer or a web.
Yeah, yeah.
Who's in charge of this? Would it be the Premier League and the competitions that have VAR, or would it be the broadcaster showing the game, and therefore the VAR calls are their property to sell sponsorships for? I don't like the idea of more sponsors, but it does seem like somebody is leaving money on the table. I'm just not quite sure who. I mean, it's an interesting point. I mean, extra time, you know, injury time is brought to you by Hublot, I believe it is, isn't it? And some clubs have specific deals for we're going into injury time sponsored by a local company. So it's a fair point. I'm with Carleed. I don't want to see more sponsorship, but it does seem that there's exploitation to be had here, Kieran.
Well, this will have been discussed at Premier League level. Let's be honest about this. And I think it's a case of waiting for the check to be big enough. Because what they don't want to do is to sell off the rights for a relatively low sum. Because if you negotiate for a small fee to begin with, then trying to ask people to pay treble the next time round becomes more difficult. So I think the Premier League is playing a bit of cat and mouse with regards to this. If anybody's ever watched matches overseas, I do a fair bit of travelling, and if you get to see Premier League games, quite often what you will see is sort of in that top couple of inches of the screen or the bottom, you will see effectively, as well as the perimeter advertising, you will see advertising on a local basis as well. Now, I suspect the reason why the Premier League has not sold those rights to date is simply because it centrally has arrangements with sponsors, which is divided equally between all 20 Premier League clubs, at present at least. And it also has some central sales of adverts. So you might have a deal which is effectively signed by the Premier League, and all 10 home games on a particular weekend, there will be advertising, on the perimeter for, product X or Y. And what the Premier League doesn't want is the perimeter advertising trying to compete with the advertising on the screen for other products, because that reduces the exclusivity of the perimeter advertising product. But we are seeing more and more invention as far as perimeter advertising is concerned. Yeah, we've spoken before about different sets of viewers or different broadcasters effectively showing different adverts in different countries, such is the degree of sophistication that we now have within the broadcasting realm. And if anybody was watching the Manchester City versus Brentford match yesterday, you say, blimey, those perimeter ads, advertising audiences have got very big. Manchester City have doubled the size of them, and they're able to. And what they've worked out is that they make more money from that than they do from the seats which have been foregone. So everything is monitored. Every opportunity is always considered, in my view, at Premier League level. And when the size of the check is big enough, then they'll probably say yes. And I'm with you and Khalid here. I just want to see the football. We accept that there's going to be ads at the match itself. That's fine. But I suspect there'll be more and more encroachment onto what we consider as fans to be things which we perhaps hold a little bit more sacrosanct.
I was watching a Big Match Revisited the other day, which is, again, I've got a lot of time on my hands during the day, Kieran, as you know. It was a Palace game from 1970. Well, I just got quite emotional seeing there's an advert for a shirt shop in Croydon on the perimeter hoardings. Like, imagine that. You'll never see that. Well, you won't see a shirt shop in Croydon again, but just an advert for a shirt shop, which in my memory was there for about 12 years. Because adverts just didn't change. You had the same advert.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Hold up. Hi, I'm Steve Lamacq, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
Our next question comes from our friend in Australia, Larkin Hogle, who has a magical ability to get all his questions asked on his show. I can only assume, Kieran, he has some photographs of producer guy in an embarrassing situation. Maybe he's got a picture of producer guy holding a £5 note, which producer guy doesn't want anyone to see. We don't know. Luckily, Larkin's questions tend to be quite interesting. So I'd love to know the secret of Larkin's success. Larkin says, is Kieran aware of any studies on the economics of the knock-off shirt market? Some of those populous places, Brazil, Southeast Asia, are football mad and also filled with opportunities to purchase knock-off kits from street vendors or local markets. Not just there, Larkin. Tooting High Street's got at least three stores where you can buy clearly knocked-off shirts. Any idea about the size and value of this market? Do clubs or manufacturers sell their shirts at cut prices in large markets with low purchasing power in order to compete with the knockoffs? I suppose the difficulty is, Kieran, when it's an unofficial underground market, it's very difficult to get a sense of what the economics are, isn't it?
It is, yes. So I know that there was a report done in terms of the total value of counterfeit goods. And that was estimated, I think, at around about 430 billion. So to give that some sort of context.
Billion?
That's your dodgy Gucci bag from Turkey and so on. To give that some form of context, that's around about four times the NHS budget in a normal year. So they are huge. A lot of it comes down to supply and demand. So there was a recent there was a random inspection at Newcastle Airport a couple of months ago. And they uncovered a couple of boxes of Snide shirts, most of which were Newcastle. A few Liverpool, few Real Madrid. And the thing is, these are being sold at the markets for £25 a pop. Now, if you take a look at the price of a genuine shirt, Liverpool are charging 70 quid seasons, as are England. Yeah. And you go, even our clubs, we're around about the 50 mark. You go, especially it's going to be out of fashion. Well, it's out of fashion within weeks, but it's only going to last a year in theory. So there is a market, and we're not condoning or justifying it, but what we have seen is that the manufacturers of football shirts have gone down exactly the same route as the broadcasters of football, and the amounts that they charge are accelerating ahead of general inflation. Therefore, this creates a demand from people who are saying, well, we're not getting as much money as we thought in our pay packets, and we can't afford to buy two or three shirts, so therefore we go for the knockoffs. In terms of the other markets, I mean, football shirts are if you go to the Adidas shop or the Nike shop in New York or Cape Town or whatever, you will pay top dollar. So if we take the Liverpool shirt, for example, I took a look at that this morning, and that would cost you 1,300 rand in South Africa, which is what, 64 quid. That compares to 70 now for the Liverpool shirt. So there might be a wee bit of difference, but not very much. And certainly when I've been, because I normally teach in New York each summer, when I go across there, the price for football shirts is extortionate. Because you always used to think that New York would be a lot cheaper than the UK, but it actually works out considerably higher because people are prepared to pay for brands And also, there's certainly a culture in the US, you know, that sports apparel is very, very expensive, and it's just seen as the norm. So as far as South America and Asia is concerned, it's likely that what we will see is the likes of, you know, Nike, Adidas, Puma, and so on. They will have their official stores in Seoul, in Tokyo, in Brasilia, and so on. And they will charge the full price, and they will simply just accept, as it goes with the territory, that there will be lots and lots of street vendors and you know, people running around in knockoff shirts.
So at least we know now what, if Nike and Adidas combine, we know what they'll be called, Nadidas.
Yes.
I mean, as you alluded, Kieran, there won't be many people with sympathy for big clubs who are losing money to this market, because it's quite simple. If you want people to buy your shirts, don't charge £75 is the answer, isn't it?
Hmm.
Our penultimate question comes from Mark Goodchild. And again, it's one of those simple questions that you think, I'd really quite like to know the answer to that question. When clubs get big chunks of money like parachute payments, do the banks charge a transfer fees like an individual would be charged with when they transfer money for a mortgage? If so, how much?
Right. As far as domestic payments are concerned, the answer is I don't think it will be an individual amount from parachute payments or from a broadcasting payment, because we are dealing with multi-million pound businesses. So therefore, you know, the banks will have a standard set of fees, but there won't be anything additional for these, except in the case of international transfers. So here, the banks, because they have to go through a little bit of extra due diligence and so on, they will charge an amount of money. It won't be huge sums, but the clubs will be anxious to get deals across the line as quickly as they can, so they get their first instalments paid. But it's going to be, you know, in tens of pounds rather than hundreds or thousands, because you know, from the bank's point of view, it's the same amount of work that they do to transfer £1,000 from an account in Spain to the UK as it is for 10 million. But, you know, it's a click of a switch. So therefore, it's actually very difficult for them to justify things on a percentage basis.
But we have one last question, Kieran, which once we get that answered, you can start preparing your quinoa sandwich for this afternoon. But of course, we also want to get, if people have noticed an element of haste in doing this podcast, it's because we want to watch England's run chase in the 2020 World Cup final. It would take a lot of doing for a country to lose two World Cup finals and a rugby league semi-final in one weekend, Kieran. But England could manage that. If anyone's going to pull that unique triple off, it will be England. And our last question comes from Phil Chater. And Phil's question is this: my dad's hometown team, Gateshead, were promoted from the National League North to the National League as champions last season. My question is, what, if any, are the financial differences between these leagues? With Gateshead already full-time, there will be little change on that score, but will there be an increase in player wages, or would they be roughly similar? And as the distance travelled in the National League North are already large, so for example to Hereford or Kidderminster, will those costs have increased significantly?
As far as the National League itself is concerned, Phil, we do have restricted amounts of data available. So, for my sins, as people are probably aware, I actually do still collect all of the accounts of National League, National League North, and National League South clubs are concerned. But because they are below a certain threshold, they don't have to show wage data, income data, and so on. So it's actually very difficult to pick up accurate figures. I suspect there will be an uplift in wages simply because you are signing players who are from the National League or of the National League standard, and it's going to be a wee bit higher than that of the National League North. When we take a look at the wages of clubs in the National League itself, the only figures that I could find gave us a pretty wide range of a total wage bill of between 1.4 to 3.3 million. Now, those are for the clubs that are submitting the data. I suspect the majority of the clubs aren't submitting any data, and therefore there will be quite a few with a lower wage budget than that. In respect of the transport costs, The issue there, and you know, we spoke to, or rather I picked up from Eastbourne Borough, that they were saying that the average cost for them has gone up from around about 450 quid to 900 quid for a coach trip for a day for hiring. That's more to do with increased fuel costs and insurance costs and labour costs and so on, rather than the distance being travelled. So I don't think the move up from National League North to National League will be the biggest driver there. It's more to do with the fact that we are having to pay substantially higher fuel costs, and that's where it's going to hit not just Gateshead, but all clubs at that level disproportionately higher, because you know it's a league where you're not generating hugely increased revenues. I think what Gateshead will notice, however, is the National League, it is Division 5 now. You know, it does look pretty damn good. And they will have a noticeable increase in the number of away fans that are attending. I think the case for having three up, three down is getting ever bigger. If I was an EFL club, I wouldn't want it. And if I was a National League club, I would want it for self-interest reasons. And we've always said, you know, we can understand why clubs do vote the way that they do.
And what about in terms of increased income, Kieran, for Phil's dad's hometown team? Are the National League North and South already part of the National League broadcasting deal, or is that a new thing for them when they get promoted?
No, they're all part of the same. But in terms of the way the money is split, it is very much geared towards the National League itself. And that did create an awful lot of big issues when the government gave its package of support to the National League. And without wanting to plug anything, I'm about to plug a film called Gate Money, which is coming out in the next couple of weeks. And I'm going along to see that at AFC Wimbledon in a couple of weeks. It's a fascinating documentary into the politics and the conflicts that exist, not just at Premier League or Super League level, but National League itself can also be a complete nest of vipers.
It sounds like there's not much difference in the finances then between National League North and South and League Two then, probably, is there?
Well, I think the big pickup between National League and National League North and South, I think you're picking up the extra bits of revenue. You're more likely to be picked by BT Sport, so therefore you'll get the money from the live games that are being shown. You'll pick up higher attendances, and that's about as far as it goes. When you go up to League Two, you then do get some substantial financial benefits, because you get the solidarity payments from the Premier League, which are probably worth, combined with the EFL TV deal itself, probably worth around about 1.2 million. So that would have a sizable impact. At the same time, of course, you're competing at EFL level, and wages are accordingly a wee bit higher, but perhaps not as much higher as people expect, because what we have seen is wage inflation in the bottom couple of leagues is not as high as it is in the Premier League and the Championship.
And you know, you collect accounts. Can you do swaps with other people of a like mind? Can you suddenly go, I've got two Stevenages. Has anyone got a Mansfield? Or are you the only collector on a full-time basis of it?
I suspect I am. People say, where do you get them from? I get them from Companies House. And I have now been contacted by Companies House. I think I might have said this before, but I've been contacted by Companies House. Will I write an article about how I've managed to get the accounts of the best part of 200 clubs a year and what I do with them and so on. So if I thought my life was any duller, I would think it'd struggle. But it's a fascinating set of resource. If you want to look at the business of football, and we've said many times before, nobody falls in love with football purely for the amortisation.
I think we all assumed it was Companies House you were getting them from, Kieran, rather than Panini.
Yes.
I think a lot, when you told me that you'd been contacted by Companies House, my heart sank because I thought, oh, crikey, here it is at last. The restraining order we've all been expecting. thank you to everyone who's donated to the pod via our Patreon page. If you'd like to make a small monthly contribution with them, that'd be very kind of you. And please go to patreon.com/priceoffootball. We do still have, I think it's about 2 tickets. I know I say this every week. I think people are swapping tickets for the live show, Kieran. Plymouth Argyle's Home Park, Tuesday the 13th of December. 1 or 2 tickets are still available for Plymouth Argyle's website. If you have a question you'd like answered on the show, if you're not Larkin Hogle, give it a try at questions@priceoffootball.com. We should be back on Thursday with some news, football news, not new news for you. And in the meantime, I shall hand you over to Mr. Kieran Maguire for his customary farewell.
As always, thank you so much for our Patreon subscribers. We really appreciate that. We know you don't have to do it, and you do it out of a sense of affection for the show. So it is hugely appreciated. Another way that you can show us some groovy vibes is to go onto your podcast app. Even if you come across us by accident, and if you can give us 5 stars, if you think we're worth it, we're averaging 4.9, and I'm absolutely chuffed to bits with that, as we all are at the team. It doesn't matter what you say in the narrative. If you choose to do any narrative at all, you could even say you would rather have the show produced and presented by Andy Gray and Reggie Cray, and it wouldn't make a bit of difference to us.
Well, which Andy Gray are we talking about? We're talking about Palace legendary midfielder Andy Gray, or you're talking about the wrong-un Andy Gray, who then it would make a big difference. That I'd put my foot down, Kieran. Oh. That one.
Right. I think we both probably know the stories about the latter.
We do indeed. Right. There's a couple of stories about the former, Kieran, but yes. of interest only to Palace fans, I think you'll find. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
The Price of Football. Price of Football.